Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Would the secretary take the roll, please?
Senator Duncan?
Here.
Senator Cruzzo? Senator Ewing? Senator Fisher?
Here.
Chairman Rhodes?
Present. For the record, Madam Secretary, Senator Cruzzo is in the House Judiciary Committee and will be returning shortly as soon as he testifies on his bill. There are several bills on the agenda today. Each member should have before them a copy of the agenda. The first bill on the agenda is Senate Joint Resolution 43 by Senator Sturgalewski. Senator, please join us.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. We're not on teleconference.
No, ma'am, we're not.
For scheduling this resolution, I'd like to be sure to let you know that it is not our intention to in any way call for slashing of the military in Anchorage, but I would like to tell you what this resolution does call for and why it's before you. It does call for reduction of military spending to a level that is more appropriate to the post-Cold War situation. Back in fiscal year 90, there was a budget agreement reached between the President and the Congress, but that was prior to the breakup of the Soviet Union. At that time, there was an agreement reached. But secondly, it calls that there be a new budget agreement that would allow for military spending to be used to meet the social and economic needs of the country. And thirdly, mechanisms to provide for the timely and orderly conversion of our economy from an emphasis on the military to one that is civilian-oriented. And I think that Congressman Young made a very solid point this morning when he talked about what's going to happen if we're going to be faced with a conversion of some 3 million military jobs, an absolutely tremendous number of jobs, and that is in industry and uniformed personnel and all the rest. It seems to me that Congress and the nation really have to look what's going to happen in that. We look at the tremendous impact going on in the Soviet Union, but that's going to hit our country. I know I was in Soviet Far East this year, and I saw all of the young military men in there, 18 and 19, that were all of a sudden standing around because they were not being utilized. And we're going to have this tremendous talent out there that we need to put to work. But the Budget Enforcement Act of 1990 had set ceilings for categories dealing with domestic spending, defense, international spending. It also created walls so that the amounts of reduction that came in could not be transferred. Say the cuts in the military defense could not be utilized for such things as Head Start and daycare and job training and et cetera, those domestic programs. There's an increasing push on the part of a number of people in Congress to see that some of those savings, instead of just going to budget reduction, would go to meet critical needs in the nation. And I think we'll be hearing more about that. So what we have here is a request that the so-called peace dividend be a reality, that it not only takes place, but that it goes toward meeting some of the domestic programs. We have made information available to you about how states have really suffered in terms of budget shortfalls, how we have seen the federal all kinds of sharing with the states cut from some 30% to 16% of state and local funding. We see the shortages we have in Medicare, just you name it, we have major issues. The census figures in 1990 came out with a much larger showing of the number of poor people in this country. We've heard about the lacks in education. So this issue of utilization of some of those dollars came out of the women's legislative lobby, and a number of states, and I've indicated that, Connecticut, Georgia, Hawaii, et cetera, some 10 states similarly introduced a resolution the same as this across the country, saying it's time for us to take a look at the national priorities, and obviously everybody, and certainly myself, want to see that the military is adequate to not only protect us, but allow us to continue with our role in the new world that we're faced with. My late husband was military. I've always worked closely on those. So there's nothing in this that says let's not have a strong, competent peacetime military, but that we use those funds to meet domestic needs. The Women's Legislative Lobby has a number of co-sponsoring groups, the National Association of Social Workers, the National Women's Political Caucus, the National YWCA, the American Association of University Women, and American Nurses Association. But that basically is the reason behind it. And now we can get into debate about one particular thing, but I thought it was telling, and we've there. Just one B, one bomber, the cost of that, $865 million, exceeds the cost of aid to families with dependent children. We saw the governor, or the president, say $600 million for Head Start. And even that figure falls far short of giving the kids across the country the start that they need. And it's hard to believe that one airplane sitting out there could mean as much in terms of meeting some of the very serious social and economic problems. I think for us to be competitive, we simply have to have a better educated and a healthier population. So that is what's behind this, and I would appreciate your questions, but also your support. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Are there questions from members of the committee? If not, this is a interesting question, of course, because military spending in Alaska has always been and traditionally been a very important part of our economy here in the Southeast. Of course, the Navy and the Coast Guard, the Army and Air Force in Anchorage and Fairbanks, mm-hmm. and the rest of Alaska provide it. Mm-hmm. Mega millions of dollars. And
you know, that's precisely, I think, the issue. We need a national debate about the changes that are going to take place. I think, again, back to what Congressman Young said, and we have heard a lot of others say it, that we are going to have to justify the need for those bases. And we're seeing the changes as, you know, we see now that when Clark is closed in the Philippines, that they're going to be coming here, that we have the global role. I think Alaska's going to be one that will continue to be strong. We have the space, we have the cold weather, we have a whole lot of factors going for us. Nothing in what we're saying here is to, you know, go out and keep America from being strong and all of the rest, but it's saying that we ought to enter in, and if we're not saying that, we need some help to say it, that we enter into a time where we set some national priorities and we get about those.
I agree, Senator, and I spoke to the committee at a greater length than they really wanted to hear last time about Alaska's changing role in rural affairs and military affairs, mm-hmm. and I believe I provided the committee with a lot of background in that regard, and probably sufficient for the year. Mm-hmm. Correct, Senator Duncan?
You did a great job.
Thank you. I believe in having a strong national defense.
Well, you know, I think that's...
I think we all do, mm-hmm. And times are changing, and we must change with them. I did a long speech on foreign affairs and whatnot. We can save as much money by, more money by changing our trade policy of, quote, free trade, which is regarded by every other nation in the world as a foolish policy to want a bilateral trade. Mm-hmm. We've lost millions of American jobs and the impact on American families, and the creation of domestic ills has been far beyond what anyone would have anticipated, but that's another topic, so I won't bring it up. What I might suggest in, as Edward Albee, the playwright, said, in providing a delicate balance in our languages, perhaps deal with the question of a balance and perhaps on the resolution, instead of urging a reduction in military spending, a balance in federal military spending and an increase in domestic spending. I don't want to send the wrong message, and I'm speaking only for myself in this matter. I believe that all of us want to be clear in that regard. And, as a diplomatic matter, rather than use the term breakup of the USSR, I might, I think perhaps changes in, we don't want to, that a breakup of is not a term popular in many quarters in the Soviet Union, and we even inadvertently don't want to offend in any way other people in the world. That's a slight word change, and perhaps one at the diplomatic level, but the committee's heard.
Mr. Chairman, might I suggest, and perhaps you were ready to suggest that, I'd be very happy to work with you and possibly have this back at an early date if we could get together and look for a few, again, it's very important that we don't send the message that we want to slash military, and that is not the intention of it. In any way, and we tried to be clear about it, but if there are some flag words, I'm perfectly happy to work with those, and I'd like the benefit of the committee's input on that.
I mean, I think that's a good suggestion.
Yes, there are several. We had the chance this week then to sit down and reason together, and
sure.
And then I'd like to have it up before it's Friday and pass it up.
Okay, thanks. And if that's a way to go, because that I don't want that message back there either. The one hand to come and say we want dollars, but the point of it is, if we don't start to address this, it'll be frittered away, and we'll see no improvement in some of the things that I think we have to do to improve our ability to compete internationally. So
I share your concern, Senator.
Yeah.
I'm sure that every member of the committee does.
Senator Fisher, just thank you. You're not also saying that there is a savings in military spending that we take all that and stick it over to the domestic side and not use any to reduce the deficit?
No, but right now there's a total wall so that we cannot consider that. I mean, they've created a wall.
But it's supposed to reduce the deficit, is it not, the savings?
Yeah. Right now it can only go for there and not to meet some of the critical needs. And I'd certainly like to see a balance there.
Are there any further questions from members of the committee? Great. Thank you very much, Senator.
Very
I made some notes on my copy. And,
good. We'll get
committee members and myself and Mr. Yifter will work with you, and I'm sure we can, without taking a great deal of the committee's time, arrive at a very acceptable. wasn't very mundane tonight. I appreciate your introduction, Mr. Senator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. Is there anyone else here who wishes to testify on that? SJR 43. If not, we will lay SJR 43 on the table to be taken up again Friday, and we will work on some changes in the wording between now and then. I would like to take up next Senate Bill 362 by Senator Kraft. Senator, please join us.
Mm-hmm.
And Senate Bill 362 provides that voter registration forms be mailed with permanent fund dividend applications. You have the floor, Senator.
Oh, nice. Okay. Before you have a piece of legislation which, if passed, puts in the household of every permanent fund resident a voter registration form. And currently, the division sends out well over 359,000 adult applications. That's what we sent in 91. And January 2nd of 92, we had 287,569 registered voters. So you can see there's quite a discrepancy there. And this legislation would just remind people that they do have the right to register. Under current registration law, a person who is eligible for a permanent fund check by dividend qualifies to vote. By placing registration forms in the application, people can conveniently change their voter information, addresses and so on, or their party affiliation if that comes down the pike. The intent of the legislation is to have the forms in all the packets. I believe that having a voter's registration form on every application would end up costing too much and would become unwieldy. Second of all, due to discussions between permanent fund dividend and the Division of Elections, it was decided that the last sentence of line 7 and 8 would make the process overly cumbersome. The Division of Elections believe that it would be easier to just have the forms sent back to them rather than going be mailed back to the dividends, permanent fund dividends. Any questions?
Any questions from members of the committee? There it is. Senator Duncan.
Just one question. I guess in the way this bill reads, that means that this goes on every year forever, that they'll receive a voter registration form with the voter fund dividend.
That's the thought.
Yeah, I guess I was just thinking, I'm not sure, I'm not sure, probably it just seems to me though that I guess the cost isn't that great. I mean, you're sending it out to people who are probably registered and who, it's just, you're sending to the same people year after year after year who probably are already, maybe many of them are registered, but not registered. They may become registered after the first year, right?
So that's an interesting question, Senator. And
we did think about that too.
How many of those people are registered, and our registration rate is at 60%. Is the approximate figure. So if you assume that everyone who is remotely able to apply for a permanent fund dividend does so, based on the theory of economic self-interest, mm-hmm. which I think is reasonable, then you would have to then come to the conclusion theoretically that 40% of the people who receive the applications are not registered.
But a large percentage of them may be children. But I guess this, I mean, I'm not sure I got a problem with it. I guess we're going to be sending voter registration forms to two-year-olds, too.
Well, it goes into just the adult packets.
Oh, it's to households only.
Uh-huh,
one card,
right.
One card to household. Two cards to household.
One card.
Two cards.
Two?
Two.
Is it two? Okay, it's two.
Or it doesn't say
that.
Well,
it was
a change. And it doesn't say, it says, maybe it's just me being dumb today, but what it says is the commissioner shall include a voter registration form prepared under AS 1507-07-OB with each permanent fund dividend application mailed to an individual. So it doesn't say more than one card. It doesn't say to a household, it says to an individual. So maybe, I guess my concern was we're mailing cards to people who just couldn't read it, right? If that's the way the bill reads. I mean, we're mailing them to each individual person, no matter what their age is. I'm not trying to cause problems. I just want to be sure we do it correctly.
You're right.
Okay. But we don't send packets to, we send a packet, but they have a family in there. They go to a bona fide adult, don't they, if I'm not mistaken?
I don't know. You get
What about that, Dr. Fiedler?
Mr. Williams is, will be able to talk about that. Any further questions for Senator Pratt?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if it's for the Senator, thank you, but there needs to be some kind of a fiscal note.
For
the mail return? In other words, somebody...
Mrs. Blaker from the Division of Elections would be able to answer that question. There is a fiscal note. Just deliver
it. Okay, yeah, that's a permanent fund division.
This is only the permanent fund. There will be someone that can answer that question that will be testified shortly, Senator. Are there any additional questions? Thank you very much, Senator Pratt. Mr. Williams, would you please join us, sir?
Tom, you're bored. Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Williams. I'm director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division of Revenue. You
should have before you a fiscal note, which is for $16,000. That's the marginal cost of adding two colored pages to the dividend application booklet. Our fiscal note is predicated on several assumptions. First of all, that the intent of this legislation is to indeed send out voter registration forms in the booklets, not with each individual application. In fact, we had requested a language modification that would clarify that it was for the booklet and not for each application.
So that's not in this bill yet. You've got a proposed amendment?
It would strike on page or line six the word application and put in and insert in its place the booklet.
But I guess it was my understanding is that in talking with the senator and staff that there was a problem with legal concerns with regard to referencing the booklet because there wasn't anything anything else in the statutes that referred to the application booklet. So they didn't want to do that. Our recommendation was, and I don't know whether you're looking on the committee substitute or the original one.
CS.
If you're looking on the CS, my recommendation would be to, on line six, to delete the word each, to say with permanent fund dividend applications, making application plural, and then on line seven, have it say mail to applicants or mail to individuals. I mean, there doesn't need to be a change on line seven, but to delete the word each.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask, because I don't recall. Does each adult get a booklet? I mean, like, does my wife get a booklet and I get a booklet?
No, you do not. Each family gets a booklet. We mail out, and attached to the fiscal notes, we mail out roughly 330,000 booklets is what we have printed. 285,000 of those are mailed by the post office, and you get one booklet. Now, that booklet contains three adult applications, four child applications, and some supplemental schedules. What we would do is simply add two pages. It would be a different color than the regular application, so they would be distinct. And they would be, those two pages would include at least two voter registration forms. Or change forms, even though we include three adult applications in each booklet. The idea was that the insertion would also, again, this fiscal note was prepared on the idea that the insertion would have a prepaid postage. Apparently, that may not be the case, and I'll let the Division of Elections talk to that. The idea was that we're trying to minimize the impact on the dividend program. We didn't want applications or voter registration forms returned with their applications. We thought the idea would be best if they were sent directly to elections and in order to minimize the impact on the dividend program, so we didn't have to send a bunch of stuff over there.
Senator Duncan?
Let me ask one question. The part of our dividend program, of course, is one of the programs that I probably get the most calls on throughout the year about people who haven't receive a dividend or they don't know where their application's at or whatever. Do you see any danger here? And I know we think this shouldn't happen, but that certain people will send in their voter registration form and not their dividend application form and say, but I applied for a dividend.
I guess Senator hadn't really considered that.
I can just see these phone calls coming to my office, but I did.
And I think it would be very important if we're going to proceed on this to make, and that's why we're going to have a different color for the voters' registration, make it very clear in the language that this is really separate from your dividend application. I think that's a valid concern. I don't know to what extent.
I don't know how you control it either, but I just know I would almost take bets that we're going to get some phone calls from people who did that.
Yeah, you could. Well, one other point that I would like to make is that due to the uniqueness of voting and part of our democratic process, we certainly wouldn't oppose including voter registration forms in the booklet. However, we very much would oppose any other type of form using the booklet as a means of becoming the publisher's clearinghouse mail out for and there's been a variety of attempts to do that. We have, to this point, resisted that very strongly, and I guess perhaps because of the uniqueness of voter registration,
your message is heard loud and clear. Let me make a suggestion with regard to language. it would read better, I would think, if we, in the place of the each that you struck, since we're adding a plural to the word application, and making it applications, if you put a the in front of it, and so it read the permanent fund did an application, and then struck the rest of the sentence, you know, mailed to individuals, because that is probably superfluous language. As a lawyer, that would seem to make the most sense in terms of being straightforward, and which is perhaps, from Senator Duncan's point of view, is an unusual approach for a lawyer to take, but
maybe we'll get another opinion.
That's only with doctors that you get a second opinion. Especially when the lawyer is the chairman of the committee.
The
committee secretary notes that Senator Porcho has joined us from the House Judiciary Committee. Are there other questions for Mr. Williams?
Just one. The chairman heard you loud and clear, but I don't know if I heard you loud and clear. And I'm just looking at say the student loan program. Why would that be so much different than a voter registration, since more people qualify probably for a student loan than they do for registered voters? Sure they do. Everybody out there qualifies for a student loan.
Senator Fisher, through the chair, again, our basic position is we don't want anything in there. and it's with a little bit of trepidation that we go with voter registration. If it begins to open up the door, that can create significant problems for us. It would have to be your discretion of what you wanted to put in there, but we don't want to see it opened up is the basic concept. And I guess voting is pretty basic to our democracy.
So of all the other ideas you've had, I mean, this is the one as far as the permanent fund board saying they would go with.
Not the permanent fund board. Basically is the division of permanent revenue.
Senator Duncan?
Mr. Williams probably can't answer this, but what is the requirements for vote for being able to raise your vote? 30 days?
30 days.
I guess I think this is probably a good idea, but I guess I'm just wondering if we're really not going to cause some difficulties down. I mean, I can just see people filling out a voter registration form and not the application and saying, okay, I thought I did. And then on the other hand, they fill out both of them and they get registered to vote, but Mr. Williams denies their permanent fund application. And so he's got to explain to them why they could be residents of this state. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, right? But it seems to me that when they do that simultaneously and they fill out a voter registration form, they're almost convinced in their mind that they've qualified for a permanent fund dividend. And it's going to make your job more difficult. Senator, I'm not trying to cause problems with the legislation, but it sounds like I am. But I just think it's going to, it does, doesn't it? So I better quit. But it sounds like it's going to really complicate things for you somewhat and may cause a lot of difficulty for those of us who are in the legislature who have to act as an ombudsman for people who want to refund dividends and so on. I guess I'm concerned. I guess I kind of think permanent fund dividend programs should be a permanent fund dividend program, period. But that's my personal opinion.
Perfect.
Complicates things.
Perhaps, Senator Duncan, there is no perfect way to deal with the situation, and as Mr. Williams noted, the right to vote is something we cherish greatly and want to both preserve, protect, and offer as easily to people as possible.
It's almost as good as your military speech.
I can launch off into a long one if you wish, Mr. Duncan. However, I bear in mind that I must work with the committee members, and that one doesn't wish to exhaust their patience this early in the session. I'll exhaust it later. Are there any further questions for Mr. Williams? Tom, thank you very much. Next, I'd like to call Laura Glazier from the Division of Elections.
Laura Glazier, Division of Elections. The division's really excited about this piece of legislation because it would get the voter registration applications out. That'd be over 600,000 applications out with two in each booklet. your concern, Senator Duncan, about whether those applications, A, will be duplicated because there will be a certain, there are, you know, 287,000 registered voters, is valid, and yet there are a lot of people that will use that for change of address. Right now, they still need to go to the library or regional office to go in and change their address. This will make it very easy for them to change an address or change their party. The state of Hawaii has something called a WikiWiki registration, and it's a one-page application, very similar to the one that we propose to put in with the permanent fund dividend application. And it would be very simple. It would be our exact form, different size, one page, and would just give them an opportunity, I think, to access the registration process. It would just simplify it for them. The Lieutenant Governor had some concerns about whether, in a different direction, whether people would think there was a contingency on their voter registration and the permanent fund. He's adamant about that. I mean, he spent a great deal of time telling me that is a very strong concern. In our minds, conceptually, we want to make it, A, we're making it a different color to help separate it from the permanent fund dividend application. B, we had originally talked about having a business reply. If in fact we did that and we got $300,000 back, it would cost over $102,000. So what we would like to propose is that we put it with a block that says place stamp here, and that would get us off of that and probably relieve some of Mr. Williams' concerns about whether they would insert it with their permanent fund dividend application. It will be addressed separately, returned to the division. Because of its size and the difference, it will be separate from our normal registration forms. It will be very obvious to us that it came. Be for a way for us to track, you know, how many people use that as a means of changing their address, changing their party, registering to vote. It's only a benefit. We can only see it as a benefit at this point in time.
Senator Fisher?
Why not do it on your own to begin with, so that there is no problem of working it with the permanent fund? Just do your own mailing, bulk rate, and go to the same mailing list that the permanent fund goes to.
Senator Fisher, through the chair. Right now, the permanent fund, by putting it in with the application, they are kindly absorbing our mailing costs. It does not cost them anything to insert two forms in their application booklet.
I guess going further, then, we ought to maybe also I'll just pick on every student loan application, ought to have a voter registration. And I guess what I'm looking at, I can see problems coming down the road with people calling me, similar to what Senator Duncan's talking about, and it's going to be a hassle. And if it's going to be that much of a hassle, it might be wise to spend, what's the cost for bulk rate to send out these, which shouldn't be too much, say it's $30,000 or something, it might be worth the hassle to do that, a separate mailing, versus tying it in with the permanent fund. So you're doing it strictly from a savings point of view?
Yes, sir.
Certainly to do a statewide mailing of this magnitude for $16,000 is the would be the bargain of the year for the
Exactly.
The
for
division.
Elections, excuse me, Mr. Chair, it would, to print it and then to mail it and then the return on it, we can't beat it. It was something that we looked into. We approached Mr. Williams earlier this year. It was something that the division had thought of earlier. It has been
I presume it would relieve your administrative problems to a considerable extent because it would provide people with a method of changing their registration to a current address, which I suspect you find is woefully inadequate.
Right. Usually it's something that people find when they've gone to the polls and they're voting
vote.
A question ballot or they're, I forgot to change my address. It's just one more chance for them to see the opportunity to make a change.
I'll bet you Don Young would do it for nothing.
Chair, I think this is a good idea to get people registered. What would be there's just a lot of administrative problems, I guess, I see. For example, I would be interested in seeing in 1993, after we do this, how many thousands of voter registration cards you get back from people who are already registered, and they do it because they're concerned if they don't do it, they're not going to get a dividend, right? I mean, all these kind of problems that people don't think as well, but think, I mean, I don't mean to be critical, but people, when it comes to permanent fund dividend, they're going to fill out every
thing that comes in that book to make sure they don't get left out, right? They're not going to overlook anything. So you may end up with a whole lot of duplicate applications of people who are already been registered for years but are afraid not to do it because they're afraid somebody's going to tell them they, you know. What would, how would it work if you, maybe, you, I don't know, maybe just take a computer program, if you, I guess it'd be probably administratively cumbersome, but just ran the registered voter list against the permanent fund dividend list and had two different types of booklets. One booklet would go to people who were not registered, and one booklet would go to people who were already registered. Of course, I mean,
if that,
that wouldn't work.
If that computer program doesn't exist now, if it's not compatible, it would cost a pretty significant amount of money to develop. Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chairman, it's not that we can't run the match. Mm-hmm. The problem is that our distribution is a bulk mail distribution. It's an unaddressed distribution, so it goes to everybody statewide. If we were going to send them the booklets out specifically addressed, our postage costs go up dramatically.
Oh, okay. I guess I never noticed what my name was.
It goes out to everybody.
You could tell which house was registered, but you couldn't tell who the person was, and of course we do registrations differently.
Okay. That's right. We don't do registrations.
I see.
And Mr. Chair, still then, if Senator Duncan through the chair, it still provides others the opportunity to change. You know, we really want to not only increase, you know, get the extra 40%, but also allow people the opportunity to access registration form.
Yes, there's tremendous cost savings here and administrative, you know, convenience. For, more than a convenience, it's a constitutional obligation that we have and that you carry out. Are there any other questions for Ms. Blazier?
One other question, just for interest. We have how many registered people in the state?
Through the chair, approximately 287,000.
280,000 registered voters. How many actually voted?
Last election, what we
have. 40%?
48? Yeah, four. I was going to say
47, 48%. So even if we increase registration to 400,000, we may not increase the number of votes necessarily, right? I mean, that's just one part of the equation. You still got.
That's correct.
We have to have attractive enough candidates like us folks to get them out.
I don't know if candidates like us folks would be enough to get them out to vote. In fact, it might discourage turnout, Senator.
Well, they vote against us at least. I mean, there's two sides.
If we discuss any more of your retirement bills with this committee, we'll probably put them to sleep.
Oh, well, it's a good bill.
With all due respect to the Department of Retirement. Are there any further questions for pleasure? Okay, thank you very much. Is there a motion to change the language to...
What did you say?
And Mr. Williams, did the suggestion I made in terms of striking the word each on line six, adding the word the, and then making application plural to applications, and then striking the language on line seven. Is that something that would be workable on your end? Senator Kraft, is that...
That's fine
with me. Hey, Mr. Chairman, I would move a State Affairs Committee. Has this committee substitute been adopted?
No, sir.
Okay. So I would move a State Affairs Committee substitute to, for 362 that has the language shown in the proposed committee substitute with your changes, right?
Okay. You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to the changes? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute is adopted.
Sure.
Senator Fisher.
Frank, was there a suggestion of a sunset provision, or was this just going to stay in law?
There's been no discussion of the addition of a sunset provision. The only difficulty with sunset provisions can be useful. On the other hand, we have to be careful that we don't have to go back and spend a great deal of time looking at pieces of legislation unless there's a need to. If it doesn't, if there are difficulties with the program, then it doesn't meet our expectations. Then I suspect that departments and elections will be very forthright in expressing that. There is a letter of intent also.
I thought it was simply suggested by Mr. Chairman, if the committee wanted to bring it rather than something that we can.
I guess we don't have it yet, but it would basically state that the department should, after several years' experience, come back to us and express to the legislature how they feel the program is working so that we can judge on the basis of several years' experience. And if I understand your concern, perhaps that's the best way to do it. I don't like to put automatic things in law that we have to spend time dealing with. We really have more important things to do in that, but I'm sure the department will come back.
So it's automatically 2 years, no matter how you look at it. Right. In other words, if it goes out January 1, we come into session, so it only gives you 4 months to determine anything, which will determine nothing. So then the following January, go out before the session, the people come back. So it's a 2-year minimum, no matter how you look at it.
Yes. And we'll have actually by next session some idea of how well it works, because you'll be mailing. Let's see, your mailing is already done. Be too late for this year. Mr. Williams,
We would a couple different scenarios. If the application period stayed the same as it is right now, the first year we would be doing that mailing. We would be doing it in early April. We wouldn't really have an idea probably till the session is close to being over. If, on the other hand, the provisions of SB 327 pass, where we have an application period that closes March 31st, we would have an idea probably around the middle of April.
I forgot to look at the effective date, and it's 93, so this is an election year cycle, which would normally allow us to tell the impact, but because we, of course, can't put that burden on you, expect you to carry it out immediately, we wouldn't be able to complete this cycle, so we'd have to go through another at least 2-year cycle before we would be able to judge the impact. So I think perhaps the letter of intent would be the best thing in that regard. Okay. Is there any objection from the committee? I'll have Mr. Gifford draft a letter of intent to that effect, that after a complete cycle, that the department and the division report back to the legislature in no special form of the draft letter to the president and the speaker. Regarding the efficacy of the program. Senator Duncan?
Chair, I move to report on committee State Fair Space 72% Bill 362.
You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the bill is passed from committee as a committee substitute. Next, I would like to take up Senate Bill 380, citations for Alaskan veterans of the Iraqi conflict. That is also Senator Kraft's bill. Senator, will you please join us? This certainly is your day of this committee. And remind me of Senator Duncan, who
we all have has both had great ideas too,
don't we? You taught me all this.
That's one of the dangers of having your office in such close proximity to Senator Duncan. Also reminds me, you are next door to Senator Zaroff at produce additional complications. Senator, you have the floor.
Okay. Senate Bill 380 provides a way to say thank you to those Alaskan military personnel who served our country in the war against Iraq. The bill proposes awarding a state medal of honor and an official citation to those persons who are willing to serve in the Persian Gulf conflict. It is estimated that there are about 1,500 eligible recipients. The fiscal note in your packet is self-explanatory and shows a total cost of $50,600 to complete this award program. The design of the medallion shall be determined in a competition conducted by the department from among Alaska residents. I cannot think of a more fitting way to honor our military personnel for the sacrifices and contributions that they made. It is my hope that the first medal and citation be awarded to the family of Army Sergeant David Duthit of Soldotna, the only Alaskan soldier known to have been killed in the Iraq conflict. SB 380 has the support of the Disabled American Veterans Association and the American Legion. Now, I think I could probably answer any questions. Try.
Are there questions for Senator Kraft? I guess there are two, reports that Senator Fisher, I know you were expressed a concern, starting to doubt that it was a constituent of yours, and that suggested to the chairman that perhaps some additional recognition was would be appropriate in the case of Mr. Douthat.
Mr. Chairman, I think in the sponsor had agreed, I think the committee subject to state affairs does take care of that. My concern was that there'd be a little special recognition to anybody that gave their lives in the conflict, and to our knowledge, there's only been one Alaska that had died in the conflict, which happens to be a resident. This would give a little recognition. You know, if there's a silver medallion, he may get a gold medallion. His wife may. That's all.
Other questions for Senator Kraft? Senator Porcheau.
What's the intent of going into such detail on the quality of the silver?
Well, that came down from the House, and there was quite a bit of conversation about that. The thinking being that it should be Alaskan silver. I can't give you any real reason.
It would be different.
0.999 fine silver, you mean?
Yes, silver is produced. The state's it's always always a byproduct, or almost always in the state of Alaska, a byproduct of gold production. The difficulty is in there's no refining here in Alaska, unfortunately, and I believe the best you could do would find Alaskan silver mixed with that of Idaho and Montana and any that's produced in Washington. That might be a bit difficult. Senator Duncan?
Well, Greens Creek out here is a silver mine, but I think they don't do any refining. They just ship stuff.
Yes, the actually it's for concentrate is shipped to smelters in the southern states. Yes?
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on that. This is a real small example, and it may work fine, but this is kind of the thing that always trips us up when we get too detailed. We're talking about metals, we've got a nice general statement here about the department shall contract and arrange for the design and minting of the medallions. I can just see a scenario where they come back and say, well, it's really not 999, that it's 992 that is more in abundance, and they'll revise their fiscal note. Maybe there's a better deal they can get from gold medallions. I don't know. I just wonder if Senator Kraft or the chair, maybe, unless there's some very specific purpose of this, it may cause more problems than it solves.
Well, I think sterling silver is 999. I think that is the intent, that they be sterling silver.
Well, I know that jewelry in Mexico, for example, is 992.
Yeah,
so,
it isn't.
But, well,
it also turns your arm black.
Yeah. 999 has the same effect.
Oh, it does?
Okay. Yes.
No, if you've had a lot of...
It all tarnishes.
Yes, yes.
All right. I told my lady about this stuff. I always remind my wife that understand.
It's the rate of oxidation of certain classes of metal to determine the tarnish.
This is what came over from the House.
I don't understand. What do you mean by that?
Eldon, you have the floor, sir.
No, we don't. The old expression is we don't give a damn honey.
However, he didn't share that view when he was in the House, but has taken to it.
For the record, my name is Eldon Mulder, aide for Senator Kraft. Senator Porcheau through the chair. Senator Porcheau, the committee bill that you have before you, or Senate bill, is actually partnered to the House bills, Representative Foster's bill, which was heard in House State Affairs, or had been heard earlier. and the discussion was revolved around trying to make Alaskan silver. And this, that they had the same discussion you just went.
Okay, right. So if it was from that discussion, then I would say that the chairman's comments are accurate on that. This will not ensure anything having to do with Alaska silver. It's unless there's a smelter and a silversmithing shop downtown here that I don't know about, that won't have any relationship to Alaska silver medallions.
Actually, it may stop the implementation of this bill cold in its tracks while the department searches for pure Alaskan silver, and someone may be able to get the contract by setting up a smelter in their backyard if they can reach 0.999. Actually, the metallurgy lab at the University of Alaska should be able to do it.
Well, it gets even more complex if you talk to gold people in the state. I'm sure they'd like to have things minted out of gold, too.
Yeah.
Or platinum. There's a platinum mine.
Good news, Bay Mining Company would feel strongly about platinum. And it does, by the way, for Senator Duncan said, that platinum will not tarnish.
That's why I brought it. Mr. Chairman, maybe we could ask our able committee aide to do a letter of intent that would suggest that they should look for, if possible, Alaskan silver, but not tie the program up because of that.
Is it, since Mr. Gifford has been favored by the committee for his brilliance with letters of intent, that it would, I think it's a wise thing to do, and in that we got. In that event, Senator, are you proposing then that we strike the language on page 2, line 3 of the proposed committee substitute, which we've not adopted, that would strike words being with the department?
Well, why don't we just strike from 0.999, I don't know, maybe you can just say from fine silver and a weight determined by the adjutant general. It's a 0.999.
Okay, put a, on line 4 then put a period after the word subsection.
Mr. Chairman, under discussion again, I'm not doing this without, you know, the consent of the sponsor. If you look on page 1 of the OCS, there's already the words about contracting, arranging, design, and minting of the medallions.
Is there?
Yes, and that's why I suggested going to line 3 for the amendment.
It'd be my suggestion, subject to the sponsor's thoughts, that we strike that whole sentence that begins on line 3 and continues through line 5 on page 2. I think it's not just the weight of the silver. I think silver itself, I mean, you could argue gold, silver, amalgamate, platinum. There's a lot of options here that of Alaskan materials, too.
Senator, is that an amendment?
It sounds like, is that what you're going to strike there? Is the department shall contract or otherwise arrange, is that what
right.
we're striking?
Right.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
It's fine with me. I don't think.
I would move that on page 2, lines 3 through 5, that we delete the sentence that begins the department shall and ends on page 5 with adjutant general of the department.
Okay. You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to the amendment? No, we have not adopted committee substitute. Do you include in your motion that a motion that we adopt the committee substitute and amend it as you have indicated?
Yes, sir.
You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to the adoption of the committee substitute and the amendment of that committee substitute? Hearing none, the committee substitute is adopted and the committee substitute is amended, striking the language indicated by Senator Michelle. Are there any other questions for Senator Kraft?
It's the last you're going to hear from me today.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Duncan often says those things to us, but he's always back. Next, I would like to call Jeff Morrison. Jeff, please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jeff Morrison, the legislative liaison for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. There's one issue that I'd like to ask, basically, to get on the record. I've spoken with Eldon about it, and it concerns in your CS, page 1, line 8, other Alaska residents as determined by the department by regulation. What we really want to avoid here, and what I think it is the intent of the legislature, which I hope to avoid, is to go through a regulatory process just to define what Alaskan resident is when we have ample reference to what I would suggest anyway, and what our intention was would be to use the definition of the permanent fund dividend application to define resident. So we don't want to do a regulatory process to define this.
Would the modification of that requirement on line 8, changing to other Alaskans as determined by the department, period, meet with your approval? That would not require you to go through a regulatory process, and
Mr. Chairman, anything would be fine. Perhaps just deleting by regulation or leaving it in there if it was clearly on the record that we would rely on another department's regulation to define what a resident was. Legally, I'm not sure what the solution is, just that, practically, the way we would implement it is we would rely on another department's regulation to define resident.
It would seem to make more sense to burden you with as few legal requirements as possible, and the addition of the word residence would, I suppose, pose one more legal requirement that may or may not fit in. What I found is that the common sense will be used if we provide general guidelines and don't make a great many specific things that ultimately, such as the .999 question we dealt with earlier.
Are you suggesting Alaskan residents as determined by the department?
I was suggesting other Alaskans as determined by the department would be the broad language, and give you the opportunity. Senator Fisher?
I guess my question is, why do we have line 2 there to begin with? We're talking about military because it's the people who served in the armed forces, so why would 2 even, as far as other Alaska residents, even be there?
Because you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fischel.
You got kind of two groups of people. You've got Alaskan kids who join the service or station in Germany, then they go down to fight in the Persian Gulf War. Plus, you have service people stationed in Alaska who may not be Alaska residents, who got called to duty in the Persian Gulf War, but they were stationed in Anchorage or Fort Wayne, right?
I guess my concern was in line 3, it says anybody, if they were assigned to Alaska duty and they arrived on June the 1st and they went over to conflict June the 2nd, they qualified for medallion.
Right. But that wouldn't include an Alaskan resident in Germany that went down that wasn't stationed in Alaska.
Senator Fisher, you may be correct. However, there's no way that we can.
Well, there is. In fact, I think Senator Fisher had a good point here. Not you brought that up.
I'm glad you brought it up, Senator.
I thought there was like 100 and so many Alaskans who served in the Persian Gulf.
We can only come up with an estimate this time, and my statistical projection is about 1,200 Alaskans.
Okay,
Alaskan residents.
And that would be Alaskan residents with 3 in there. We've all of a sudden gotten somebody who's an Idaho resident getting one of these medallions.
Right.
I'm not sure you need 3, quite honestly. I'm not sure we need subsection 3, because that number 1,200 could all of a sudden go to 3,000 or 4,000 because they just happen to be in Alaska and went over even though they're not Alaska residents.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
The best information that I've been able to obtain is that by adding number 3 there, we increase the pool by about 300. These are people who were in units, and the units got assigned to Saudi Arabia.
That's not a big number, but I guess I'm just questioning what the intent is here. I think the intent is to honor Alaska residents, and not just because they happen to end up in Alaska. I'm not sure. Sorry, Senator Kraft left. I'm not sure if subsection 3 is really needed or desired in this legislation.
The people that were stationed here are from units that are in Alaska and have been in Alaska historically for quite a long time. And
I can share with you at least what the Representative Foster's thoughts were on this as I can recall them and as it came up in committee hearing. That phrase, paragraph 3 or 2 in the original bill, was put in, I believe, by prior to this. I'm referring to HB 188, which you'll be seeing probably before too long. It was added to HB 188 by either the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee in the House or State Affairs Committee, just for the purpose of basically giving recognition and thanks to members of the military who were stationed in Alaska, but then their whole unit got transferred over to Saudi Arabia as a way of saying, Alaska thanks you for the effort that you did, even though you weren't an Alaskan resident. I'm not arguing for or against, I'm just saying that was the process behind putting that in.
Mr. Mulder, could you provide us some more information?
Senator Duncan, through the chair, there is, through this whole permanent fund dividend problem that we've been going through, it's made us aware of another situation, that is, there are a considerable number of military personnel whose families are registered Alaskan, who themselves are not registered Alaskans, because of different requirements pertaining to pay, military pay, overseas pay. So the thought here was, people who've made a stake or had a stake or interest in Alaska in terms of being military personnel shouldn't be singled out or excluded just because they didn't become Alaskans, that they were, in fact, they were a part of it. And then so you start going, well, what if the person only was a military member, was only here for a couple days and then got shipped out? Well, it's very difficult to prejudice against a person here who's here only 2 days as opposed to a person who's 2 years. You start drawing into a fine line or a problem of drawing where's the cutoff point. So rather than establishing the cutoff point, they included it, considering the fact that the estimate was only about 300 people.
And let me supplement that with two things. First, the people that came from Alaska, a number of them, many of them came from the from permanent hospital and medical units that were here and were sent to the Mideast, and they will return here, and they're units that are available in Alaska and actually are backup for any kind of needs that we have. And secondly, from my chairman's own personal point of view, anyone that's is ordered and willing to cross an Iraqi minefield on my behalf, I'm not going to quibble over exactly you know where they were, what they were doing. I think they're worthy of some recognition, and particularly when the unit is stationed here.
I'm just curious with the argument that you just pressed forth with why not Vietnam folks too? We've done nothing for those guys. So I don't know where you draw the line at all. And I guess I was looking at two being out because they would have qualified on three, but I was straightening out on that. Now I'm beginning to wonder why the three should even be there. I mean, if the argument, I thought the argument really was we're going to honor Alaskans. And we already have a definition for Alaskan in line two now, or in line eight. If we're going to go general to recognize the folks that were over there giving their life or possibly giving their life for us, then you should go back and get the Vietnamese Alaskans also. They gave their lives too, and we've done nothing for those folks, I don't think, at all, ever in the legislature.
I would agree with that, Senator, but this deals with the Persian Gulf situation, and I would agree that Vietnam vets were a few rather shabbily. But that's a different question.
Well, it's a Senate bill. You can only change the title.
And we would, I'm sure, have a whole host of other considerations, and the committee would be spending a great deal of time on this. Mr. Duncan?
Chair, just one other question. I guess this is not worth exploring. I'm not sure I agree that we should be giving everybody who's ever been here a medal, but that's not worth arguing. But what does it mean, Mr. Morrison, stationed in Alaska immediately before service? What is immediately before? 1 week, 2 weeks? Do they have to be here when they were?
If their military orders would show them being transferred from a duty station in Alaska.
So maybe immediately before, is what we want to say, right? Immediately before could be that they were here 2 weeks before and transferred and transferred?
It could. I think, you're talking a very few number of cases, if that many.
I know that there were a number of people in medical units that went over, combat medical units, and I happen to know because receptionist of the law firm's husband was in in one of those units a long time Alaskans.
Was he in Alaska?
Pardon?
Is he in Alaska?
She was in Alaska, and he had been here for a long time, married for a number of years. So.
Is he in Alaska?
Yes.
Well, he would qualify under one.
He would qualify under one anyway. Again, these we're talking about units that are that have historically been stationed here and are really part of the community, much like your Coast Guard unit that is here, Senator Duncan. Another units that are stationed here.
The Coast Guard region. Unit came up here. We've lost almost everybody we have in the Coast Guard. They've gone out. But it's okay. You keep bringing that up.
And they don't vote here.
They don't?
Mr. Gifford, did you say that?
No.
Mr. Chairman, if I could,
Mr. Morrison,
I
you have
appreciate, I'd like to solicit the committee's guidance on the special consideration for Sergeant Doka. I want to back up a little to explain a little bit about that .999 fine silver. That's a fairly standard definition, and in my it wasn't anything I suggested, but in my conversations with people who mint silver medallions, that's a fairly standard type of thing that they use. They are required when they mint something. I think this is probably federal law to stamp in the medallion itself what the degree of fineness is. And so in silver medallions, it would be stamped into the silver .999, maybe on both sides, I'm not sure. that's in a way of asking for guidance on the on Sergeant Talbot's special consideration or special medallion, because if it were to be anything other than the same medallion, it would take a different striping. It would need to be a brand new die, basically. If we're going to be gold, for instance, we could do that. It would be an enormously disproportionate cost, and I just, it will take a change to the fiscal mode, which I'm willing to do. I just wanted you to be aware that that would it'd be another probably $2,000 just to prepare the die for a different type of medallion.
Hardly be worth the cost to strike one medallion from a cut.
It was my understanding anyway that all of the medallions would be numbered, and that there was at least the House letter of intent that the House adopted, or the House I suspect will adopt, both committees, Finance Committee adopted it, would be that Sergeant Dalton would receive the first medallion, number one medallion. And that was the way that that the House, at least to this point, has elected to address the special situation.
Yes, who owns the rights to the medallions as far as sale to anybody? For example, collectors. I think if you're only going to strike, if you figure on 1,800, I think the collectors are going to want some too. Do we own that right, or is the guy that's doing the thing?
Mr. Chairman, we do own that right. We would have the copyright of the medallions. However, it was the House's intent, and again, this is the House and here the Senate, that these medallions only be made available exclusively to people who would be eligible. And they would not be, if there was any surplus, they would be melted down. That was, I believe, in my fiscal order.
Okay, so they have to get them through you. In other words, it's not that the striker decides, or say the Alaska Mint Company decides, well, okay, well, they don't sell anybody anything.
No, sir.
It comes through you, and then they destroy.
We distribute them based on ensuring that people have the qualifications in accordance with this. This is where it helps to make sure that I understand what your intent is, or what the intent is, because this allows a lot of leeway, and I just want to make sure that you understand what my current impression of how it would be done, so that if you feel differently, that can be worked out.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Duncan?
I don't see in the committee substitute we adopted that we even mention a separate medallion at all. That's what I'm doing. I mean, if we're not talking, we did not adopt the amendment that Senator Fisher had offered.
At least I'm not looking at one that says.
Mr. Chairman,
the committee substitute incorporates.
On line 13 of page 1, there's a subsection C says specifies the medallions for the persons, basically one person.
Oh, I see. You're saying that means there should be different ones.
Well, that's what I'm asking, basically, is should it be or should it
no, it shouldn't.
I'm not sure how to solve that.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Gifford?
The CS came about as a result of a proposed amendment that came to me this morning from Senator Fisher's office. He wanted to specifically make sure that something was done to reference to his constituent or sergeant or about it. And we rolled it in. I was going to bring up that your amendment on page 2 of the CS that I'm a little confused. That anyway, but that's why that language is like that about that specific medallion. That was because Senator Fisher had wanted to make sure that was done. Now, I don't know what y'all want to do.
Chairman, my concern was that there's special recognition. If it's number one, that's fine. If it's a new one at 2,000, what's the life worth? It's sure and hell worth more than 50,000.
You're right.
You know, so the dollar amount doesn't bother me if it does end up 2,000. But if five insurance number one is going to be it, we can say, yes, you're getting number one because he's the only one.
Senator Pochot and then Senator Duncan.
I was going to suggest that one way of eliminating confusion here is just on line 14, strike the S on medallion, just talk about a medallion.
And add person identified under A of this section, A1 through 3, instead of just A1, right? Because we do have two separate, I had no separate form. On the next page we have A2 and 3, and that does imply two separate medallions. I think that's where our problem is, so.
Yep.
You might even just take D and make that, eliminate C. The design of the medallions for the person identified under A1 through 3 of this section shall be determined by competition conducted by. And that would eliminate the confusion, I think. That would mean one medallion in my mind. Mm-hmm. One design, I mean.
Right. Mr. Gibbard.
Earlier the committee had struck on page 2, remainder of line 3 through 5. My only question was, in subsection C on page 1, the department is authorized to design and mint. You struck the authorization to mint for the second medal going to a number of people. Do we need to authorize them to mint? Well, we would under Senator Duncan's.
Well,
just
maybe I can try to amend.
Are we trying to pull the House bill? Is that a problem?
No. I think what we were trying to do was accommodate Senator Fisher's.
Mr. Chairman, may I try to amend?
Desire to recognize Sergeant.
And we share that concern too, Senator Duncan.
I would like to move that we do the following. That we leave subsection C the way it is. amend subsection C to say A1 through 3 of this section. I'm sorry. And then subsection D, just say.
Strike the whole thing.
Strike the last. No, don't strike the whole thing. Because that's the competition factor. Leave that first, leave it the way it is. I think you strike the A2 through 3. The design of the medallions for the persons identified under A1 through 3, if you need to say that, or the design of the medallions
shall be determined by competition
right.
conducted by the department.
And leave that last line sentence off just as you had before. So the change would be to make subsection C apply to A1 through 3.
We just say under A, this section. Why bother?
Well, I don't know. Okay, under A, whatever the drafting would be. And then subsection D would say the design of the medallions of this section, the design of the medallions shall be determined in a competition conducted by the department for among state residents. The department shall award $1,000 to the winner of the competition. And I think that solves the problem.
Okay.
Would
Mr. Gifford?
The line 13, page 1, it says the department shall contract or otherwise arrange for the design. You've got to get rid of that. Because you're already telling them they're going to design, or you subsequently tell them they're going to design through this contest.
Right.
Okay. Did you strike all of that in subsection C?
No, we leave that all in there.
Right.
department shall contract or otherwise arrange for the design and minting of the medallions with persons identified under A of this section.
And then we had two, D is merely two two specifics, that is A, by competition, and B, the, well, three specifics, state residents, and C, $1,000. So that follows logically. So Senator Duncan, your amendment is that on page 1, line 14, that we, in after the notation 1, we put a dash and then 3, so it reads person identified under A1 through 3 of this section.
If that's proper drafting, or under A of this section, whatever is proper. Okay.
And, either would be appropriate. And then on page 2, on line 1, after the word medallions, strike all language in that sentence up to the word shall. And so the sentence reads, the design of the medallions shall be determined in a competition conducted by the department from among state residents. Period. The department shall award $1,000 to the winner of the competition. Period.
Members of the legislature or family are not eligible.
Is there any objection to the amendment made by Senator Duncan? If not, turning to line 8 on page 1, is there an amendment by a member that would strike the words by regulation so that the department will not have to go through the formal regulatory process?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to Senator Porcello's motion? If not, the words by regulation are struck. We have a new committee substitute. What is the pleasure of the committee with regard to this committee substitute? Senator Porcello.
Mr. Chairman, I move to ask unanimous consent that the new State Affairs CS is amended committee substitute to be adopted or moved from the committee with individual recommendations of the company fiscal note
and letter of intent as drafted by Mr. Gifford, who will circulate the letter of intent to the committee members.
Okay, question. Did the committee want to specifically designate number 1
by letter of intent?
By letter of intent? Yes, sir. I believe that is the intent of the committee, okay. Given the exact question Mr. Duffin made. You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to passing the bill from committee with individual recommendations? Hearing none, the bill is passed from the committee as a committee substitute with individual recommendations.
See, what we could have done with this one is, God has gone, if we could have made this at one of the new pages of the new identification book, asking them if they were Persian Gulf veterans and also they could submit design.
Are you
one stop shop?
Trying to give Mr. Williams a coronary? I probably would have done it. I would like to take up next Senate Bill 381, which would inform potential PERS retirees of health benefit variations as a result of retiring. This bill is by Senator Kutula. And I believe there's a member of Senator Kutula's staff here that wishes to testify. Paula, if you identify yourself for the record and you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Paula Powell, and I'm here as Senator Kutula's staff, who apologizes for not being able to be here today. Senate Bill 381 basically would put into statute the requirement that the administration notify PERS employees who are retiring of some of the insurance coverage which is available to them. One of the problems that Senator Kutula has seen with some of his constituents is that they will come to him and say, but we didn't know that this health insurance or this optional benefit was available to us. The dental, vision, and audio and long-term care optional coverage for retirees, there's a 60-day window during which time they can choose it, and it's a one-time only window. If they don't choose it, they can't go back later and say, I want it. They can, as I recall, add a spouse or delete a spouse, but they cannot themselves opt for it. So what this bill would do would be to require the administration to explain to people who are retiring that the coverage that they have may be different than what they've had before, and to also let them know that there's a window of opportunity for their optional benefits. There are a couple of changes that would be required in this. I should tell you that the administration, and you have in your packets, what the administration is presently doing now. And they have a fairly complete package that goes out to employees, and Mr. Stallmaker is here from Retirement and Benefits, where they require employees to sign a statement and where they require employees to, where they are required to inform employees of what might be facing them. However, this isn't done by regulation, and it's part of their administrative procedure, and Senator Kutula would like to put this, have this put into statute to ensure that it continues to be done. Administrations can change, and if we are faced with a decreasing number of state employees, there might not be the opportunity to for the department to continue doing this. So he wanted to put this in statute. So basically, that's what the bill does. There are a couple of changes that have come to our attention. And do you want me to explain that now?
Could you please call?
On line 7 of the bill, it says, and if so, explain what the differences are between the health insurance coverages. And it was called to Senator Kutula's attention that you're talking about 200 employers here, and everybody might have different health coverages, so that to explain what the differences are is rather unreasonable, and so he would suggest simply deleting that phrase, and if so, explain what the differences are, just to delete that. And the second change is, or suggestion, is on line 8. It says the administrator shall also notify those members of time limits for selecting health insurance coverage, and it should be optional coverage. That's your dental, vision, audio, and long-term care, because that's where the time limit is. And I hope Mr. Stallmaker will correct me if I'm
wrong.
The
proper term would be optional health insurance coverage.
Optional coverage. Right. And then the final suggestion literally just kind of came up just before the hearing when Senator Kutula recognized that what we're doing here affects only PERS employees. And if we're going to codify it and put it into statute, then we really need to include TERS, the judiciary, and the elected public officials before. And so that would really be more consistent. So I guess we're talking about a committee substitute if that's what the committee desires. That's all I have, unless there are any questions, and Mr. Stallmaker is here.
Okay. Are there any questions for Paul? No. Thank you very much
for your
testimony. Mr. Stallmaker, would you please join us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Bob Stallmaker, Deputy Director for the Division of Retirement and Benefits. The department is neutral on this bill. We, as Paul has pointed out, we are currently doing this. We have been doing it for a number of years. The forms we ask retirees to complete have two lines, one that they sign if they do want the optional coverage, the other that they sign if they don't want the optional coverage. Codifying procedural things are something that certainly, what value that has. Certainly, as Paul pointed out, the senator feels that there is a distinct need to have it codified. Since we're already doing it, we don't anticipate there to be any fiscal impact, and I think we're already doing things that language would require that we do. So I'll be happy to answer any other questions right now.
Mr. L discussed the fact that this would apply only to PERS retirees or people who intend to retire from PERS, and I don't have a copy of the statute before me. Is it appropriate in this section of the statute to also include language to the effect that the administrator shall notify
those persons who are members of, you know, PERS, CHERS, judicial, and PORS. I realize I'm asking a legal question. I don't, of course, can't answer it myself. And you've done rather well in that area in the past. So.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman. I would recommend that, and certainly I agree with Paula that that if we're going to do it for one, we should for all. But we would need separate section changes addressing 1425, which would be the TRS statutes, 2225, which would be the judicial retirement system, and 3937, which is the elected public officers retirement system.
We could draft a committee substitute that would read in section two that the would actually reference those sections in the statute and insert the language in section one. We could make section two of the bill, and it would disappear after this language became part of the statute. That would then say this language should be inserted in addition to the PERS section to all the ones we discussed. Senator Duncan?
Whatever is right, but I think you almost need four separate sections repeating the language in each case to make it part of the permanent statute in all four areas. I think it's got to show in those retirement statutes. Whatever legal things needs to be done, I think it intends the same.
Yes, I'm saying that we may well need to expand this to four sections. One, it will be inserted in each section. And Mr. Gifford can consult with legislative legal on that and determine the most expeditious way. If we can do it with just one section, that will be fine. That will only become part of the section laws and not part of the statute. If not, we can do it with four sections. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I might ask a quick question. When teachers retire from a school district, do they do all their paperwork through your agency as opposed to their school districts?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Porchelle, everybody who retires will file a retirement application with our division. We then will counsel them a lot of times before they retire, and certainly at the point of retirement. All the applications are filed through us.
So this paperwork is not a problem. It's not something that... I mean, you're doing this type of paperwork for teachers as well as public employees now.
Correct. Through the chair.
This is not something they are unfamiliar with.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Duncan.
I would move that we adopt a State Affairs Committee substitute to change the language as recommended by Paula, where we would delete on line 7 after employees, to delete the rest of that sentence, but a period after employees.
Add optional before health insurance?
Add optional before health insurance, and then
and
do the
include
same.
Include either a second or third or fourth section to make it make the bill apply to the other retirement program. Gentlemen, you've heard the motion. Is there any objection to the adoption of the committee substitute? If not, committee substitute is adopted. What is the pleasure of the committee with regard to this bill?
Mr. Porchelle, I would move and ask unanimous consent that we report out the new state chair CS percent bill 381 with the accompanying fiscal and individual recommendations.
You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to the motion to pass the bill from committee? Hearing no objection, the bill is passed from committee with the individual recommendations. The State Affairs Committee is adjourned. Thank you.